Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the higher for longer playbook as elevated rates continue to weigh on stocks. The investment committee sizing up the best plays to make right now and, of course, which ones to avoid. Joining me for the hour, Josh Brown, Stephanie Link, and Jim Labenthal. Take you to the markets. We're holding on to gains, at least as the Dow is concerned, but S&P remains in the red, as does the Nasdaq. You have had some buying in some of the mega caps, but not really able to get anything sustainable. Steph, Jonathan Krinsky out today saying the bear's in control for now. The correction likely has more to go as long as the S&P remains under 5114, which currently is. The risk is to the downside. Now, the technicians like Jonathan Krinsky have not been right recently, but maybe they're feeling a little emboldened now by the recent price action in the market.
Yeah, I mean, you're down about 4% from the highs, but in the last 16 months, you're up 32% in the S&P 500. That is huge. So could we take a pause? Absolutely. But I have to step back, Scott, and we talk about the overall growth being important, the macro factors, because it's so important for earnings, the micro factors. And if you look at the U.S., Atlanta Fed GDP tracker is at 2.8%. This morning we got IMF that raised global growth to 3.2%. China GDP at 5.3%, second quarter in a row over 5, and 6.6% sequential annualized growth rate there. No one was really expecting that, but obviously their stimulus programs are starting to kick in. Mm-hmm. That is the reason why the inflation story in my mind is kind of stubborn, but the growth is better. So I kind of root for better growth, a little bit, all right, a little bit higher inflation, but that should bode well for earnings. And we're just in the early season. And bank earnings are always sloppy. So I do think as we progress through earnings season, we are going to do better, but higher for longer. We have to adjust for it. I would not be surprised if we have no rate cuts this year. In fact, I'm starting to lean that way. I think a lot of people probably are. Mm. That's not a bad thing, though. It's because growth is better.
It potentially. Okay.
These are the numbers
you
here.
You raise great points, but higher for longer potentially equals lower multiples, which equals lower stocks. And you point to adjusting to the idea that we're not going to get any rate cuts. Josh, I feel like this sale of CBRE by you is a little bit of that. It's adjusting perhaps to higher for longer and what that's going to mean to certain sectors of this market and certain kinds of stocks. Am I right or wrong?
Well, to be clear, that's a stop loss. That's just risk management. But you're right, because that's why the market sold the stock off and other stocks in that group. Real estate stocks had been doing well over the last couple of months when it looked like we were getting closer to the start of a rate cutting cycle. And if you looked at the price action, they had gained back everything that they had lost from the rate hiking. So they ended up getting turned away. I think the real story there is the 10-year. I think that makes sense, quite frankly. I think that's why you're seeing dividend stocks fading. You're seeing industrials having trouble. That really is a red line situation. I don't think that we can withstand WTI crude at $100. I don't think we could withstand a 10-year treasury at 5. Why does the 10-year treasury at 5 matter so much? It really is the point at which a serious conversation has to be had from an asset allocation standpoint about trade-offs. If you think stocks are going to do 7 or 8% real over the course of 10 years, which, by the way, from the multiple that we're currently selling at, would be fairly ambitious historically. But even if that's your thought process about the asset class, now here comes a 10-year treasury where you're taking substantially less risk, probably less volatility, at least from today It's a point at which people make that decision that they're going to allocate less to one and more to the other. So what Stephanie said is true. It hits the multiples. Not for every stock and not equally and not in every sector and not at the same time, but it is a countervailing factor. If somebody is equity only, then they don't respond to what I'm saying. They dismiss it out of hand. Oh, whatever. But if somebody has to choose and they're multi-asset class and what they do, it's real. It's a factor.
But Jimmy, I mean, do we need a higher for longer playbook now? Do we need to rethink the kinds of stocks and the kinds of sectors that we want to invest in if we're going to listen to the likes of the vice chair of the Fed, Philip Jefferson, who says rates may stay higher for longer, or San Francisco's Mary Daly, who says no urgency to cut? The chair himself speaks today at 1:15 Eastern, so in a little more than an hour. Now, it's an event based on the Canadian economy, and it's out down in D.C., and I don't know that we're going to get anything of substance relative to rate policy from Chair Powell, but you never know. But that's the prevailing thought, higher for longer. So do I need a new playbook for stocks?
So good question. How about if I answer it this way? I think where we need a new playbook, Scott, is if the talk pivots back to rate hikes. If we're where Stephanie just said, you know, maybe no rate cuts this year, or where the Fed funds futures markets is right now at 1 to 2, somewhere around 1 to 2 rate cuts this year, the market will, to use the term we've all used, adjust to that. It's in the process of adjusting to it right now. And that adjustment, folks, could look like a 5 to 7% pullback from the recent high. I don't think it's going to get worse than that because the narrative hasn't changed. Right now, the Fed is talking about rate cuts. Right now, the labor market is strong. Right now, profits are growing. Now, Scott, if that changes, if we start bringing back rate hikes into the conversation, the playbook changes.
Well, let me ask you this. You could make the argument, I think it's fair, to say we've had de facto rate hikes. Rates have backed up, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's put pressure on the stock market as a result, certainly relative to where people thought rates were going to be right about now. So, yes, I agree with you that an actual rate hike would be a game changer because it would formally reset expectations. But the movement in the bond market is not going to help stocks if it certainly continues to back up and you see a 10-year, to Josh's point, get closer to 5%.
Right. So, again, I like your question that you asked, do you change the playbook? Sometimes you run a play in the playbook and you get stopped at the line of scrimmage, right? That just happens, and then you re-huddle and you run the next play. And that's where the market is right now. Yeah, we got stopped at the line of scrimmage recently. You talked about bank earnings, Steph, and they're sloppy, but they're sloppy because of the higher rates, Scott, that you're talking about, right? Net interest income is harder to come by in the rate environment we're in. But to the point of not changing the playbook, investment banking is picking up. Loan demand should be following all of these grants from the CHIPS Act and all of the plants that are being built across the nation. There's a lot of things to be feeling positive about that, to me, says we don't need to go into the locker room at halftime and change the playbook. We need to run the plays and understand that not every play runs for a touchdown.
But if the defense has adjusted, why would you run the same plays over and over again? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
So I hear you. And by the way, again, good question, because we could all be wrong on this. But what I'm basically saying is what you're seeing in the market right now is just the garden variety day-to-day noise. If you'll notice, Scott, and you did, right, a 5 to 7% pullback isn't even a correction. Usually every year you get one correction, 10% or more.
So the 10-year backing up to 465 is just noise.
Wait. We already have seen an adjustment. Technology year to date is now only up 4% from being up 10%. Energy is up 12%. Industrials are up 6%. Financials, even after the crummy mixed earnings, still up 6%. You have absolutely seen a broadening out and a play on higher rates, because higher rates are hurtful to long duration assets, and technology and growth are technically long duration assets. And these others, and in the meantime, wait a minute, in the meantime, you know what, inflation is still high, but inflation has come down enough, and the economies globally now, as I mentioned, are expanding, so cyclicals should actually do a bit better, especially if their earnings are just as good as technology.
Not if you think that a higher for longer rate picture is going to put more pressure on the economy. Not all cyclicals.
That's a good question. That's a good point.
Are necessarily going to work in that environment. One of the reasons why you had the broadening as intense as you did since the beginning of March was on the idea of lower rates and the economy is going to keep strong and then we're going to pull this off.
We have eight.
Well, the longer rates remain higher, you raise more questions about the end game.
There is no question, but we have enough, we have had $8 trillion of stimulus, of fiscal stimulus over the last 4 years into this economy, and it has offset the higher interest rates from the Fed. So I'm not saying that higher interest rates aren't going to slow us down. In fact, it probably will, but we have such tailwinds from massive amount of liquidity into the system that that is why we can handle it. And by the way, it's not just here. It's globally liquidity has been put into the system. So we can handle it. And that's why I think the cyclical stocks and sectors have done better.
Think about rate sensitive purchases. Think about autos. Think about anything purchased on a credit card. Think about mortgages, right? They're all more difficult in the higher for longer environment. So why would somebody like me continue to be bullish and say, hey, the market's just adjusting?
I'm not saying don't be bullish.
No, but let me finish
the thought.
I think about
can you be as bullish in the areas you were prior to the backup
yes.
in rates?
And here's why. And so, okay, you're interrupting me because it actually makes the point stronger. People are employed. That's mm-hmm. the sine qua non. That's the thing that gets us through. Look, 4.63, wherever we are on the 10-year, yeah, sure, it's high compared to the last 13 years. It's not high by historical standards. It's not a level that crushes the economy as long as people are employed, which, I mean, we just see no signs of the labor market cracking. That's what gives me comfort, Scott.
Josh?
I agree with what Jim and Stephanie are saying. And longer term, of course, different interest rate equilibriums give you the opportunity to make money in stocks. What we're talking about is not the absolute level of rates. We're talking about the journey to 5% being historically significant. And it really is. The data is unequivocal. And I think it's important to bring data into this conversation so that we're not needlessly scaring people and we're not saying things just for attention. Go back on the S&P 500. We ran the numbers this morning. Back to 1978. For all periods, the S&P 500 typically does plus 2.3% over 3 months after in all periods. But when the U.S. 10-year Treasury crosses 5% for the first time, which now looks increasingly likely, that turns into negative 1.8%. On a six-month basis, it's worse. 4.8% positive for all periods for the S&P. When we cross that 5% level on the 10-year Treasury, it's negative 6%. There is a real cost to what happens to stocks when we cross for the first
sure.
time that 5% level. Now, that's 3 months and 6 months. So, of course, if you're long-term oriented, you will use those opportunistically. But understand, when I say the average is negative 6, that means half the time it's worse. So understand, you can be bullish, you can think that stocks are the right place to be, but you have to accept the fact that back to 1970, almost 50 years of data, something materially changes in the asset allocation picture when you're crossing 5% on 10-year yields for the first time.
Sure.
Period.
Yeah.
It's data.
And Steph, let's be clear. I mean, you could, like you are, easily make the argument that the bullish trend is still intact, as some will because, and many will, because they'll focus on the fact that the Fed is going to cut rates and the economy is strong. And once you get past this little bit of noise, if you want to characterize it as that, you focus on the trend. You keep your eye on the ball. The eye on the ball is good economy, Fed cutting. Truist Keith Lerner, he's going to be on Closing Bell with me today to make the case for all of you. He says the pullback has likely more to go for some of the reasons we've talked about, mm-hmm. but that the trend is still positive. The trend is positive. Goldman, buy the dip. Why? Because the macro baseline of resilient growth remains, mm-hmm. to your point.
Yeah, I mean, the growth has been the surprise. And then if you break down the inflation from last week, CPI, a big part of that was shelter. Shelter grew 5.7%. That's 35% of CPI weight. It's huge. But then when you look at the PPI actually made more progress. And the components within the PPI actually filter in more to the PCE, which is what the Fed looks at. So we have a very big PCE number coming down the pike in the next couple of weeks. And hopefully that number is going to make progress. It's not going to be that 2%. Level. But again, if we make some progress,
it's going to have a good two handle on it.
Well, it's okay because we want it to get to two. Maybe we don't have to wait to get to actual actually two for the Fed to do something.
Well, no,
but
we not, maybe.
The,
not maybe. They told you.
Well,
they told you they're not going to wait till two. They're going to cut before it gets to two.
We will have to see. We will definitely have to see. But I'm more encouraged about the growth in the economy and the sustainability of the growth. And when I listen to Larry Fink of BlackRock, and I listen to Jamie Dimon, Brian Moynihan, you listen to all of the bank executives, they were all very optimistic, especially about the consumer and especially about like credit cards and delinquency rates and problem issues. There aren't any problems at this point in time on the consumer part of the economy. And many of them talked about how there is so much money in money markets, probably going even more because rates are going higher. Larry Fink said it was $9 trillion in money markets last Friday. That to me was a brand new number. It had been $6 trillion. So there's a lot of money on the sidelines that, you know what, if the market comes in, you get an opportunity to buy, and you're going to start to see that, I think, and that'll be another tailwind for equity markets.
Jimmy, Bank of America's April Global Fund Manager Survey, most bullish, the most bullish fund manager survey since January of 2022. Those fund managers are obviously looking at the same kinds of things that Steph is looking at, where they suggest that 78% say a recession is quote unquote unlikely within the next 12 months. Largest drop in bond allocation since July of 2003.
So a quick note on the bull bear surveys, and we talk about this a lot on the show, but folks, in case you missed this, the high bullish reading is not the contrary signal that you think it is. The high bearish signal is a very, very contrary signal. So look, I mean, the survey could still have it wrong. It could be that everybody's bullish just before the top. However, for all the reasons that we went through, I think there's a solid reason why the survey is that way. Now, 78% soft landing, of course, you know, last week we heard Jamie Dimon say he thinks exactly that number, right? 70% is what the market thinks for a soft landing, and he thinks it's way too high. I got it. Again, those rates, look, we can withstand this level. Josh made the point, it's a valid point, about 5% from an asset allocation point of view. Mm-hmm. From a fundamental economy point of view, 5% doesn't change capital expenditure decisions any more than 4.63 does. But the point about asset allocation stands, it just doesn't change the actual functioning of the economy.
Sure. My point at the top of the program was not to say, do you need a higher for longer playbook with the assumption that that means you need to all of a sudden get all bared up and figure out what to do with your assets. My question is, can you credibly look into the camera and give somebody actionable advice that says buy small
caps when
I could maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago? Can you look into that camera today and say, I think you should still buy small caps, even if rates back up, because I think that's highly suspect?
That's fine. And by the way, the reason when I say it's a good question is because the answer is not known. If the answer was known, we wouldn't have the question,
why,
right?
Isn't the data of the market telling you what the answer to the question is?
No.
And why is the Russell down 3.5% over the last month, by far the worst of the
majors? Now, you've got two questions, and I want to answer them both. Because you know me, and you ask, doesn't the market tell you something? Some people feel it does. I feel in the short run, the market is a lot of noise. It's schizophrenic. It doesn't tell you as much as you think it does. Some people disagree with that. That's fine. Regarding the Russell 2000, it's been up, it's been down. It's been up, it's been down. And when it's been down, it's been the time to buy it. Why? Because, and again, sorry to repeat this, strong economy, profits growing. Yeah, we know that higher interest rates are a headwind on small caps. That's known. That's in the Russell 2000 right now. It's not like the Russell 2000 doesn't know where the 10-year and where the Fed funds futures are.
So the market telling the story correctly. The Russell is?
It's saying this is a great buying opportunity.
Is it?
You have to look forward. You have to. Now, listen, I could be wrong. Scott, plenty of times I've been on the show, I've been wrong. And folks, if you're listening, if you've watched me long enough, you'll make the decision whether what I'm saying makes sense or not. In a high growth environment for the economy, which, by the way, Atlanta Fed GDP is 2.9. Now 2.9%.
I was wrong, 2.9.
All right? With initial jobless claims at 200,000 week after week after week, it is reasonable to expect profit growth. Now, by the way, the Russell 2000, you keep seeing estimates coming down. It's trading at something like 14 times forward earnings. I'll take that in a strong economy with a strong labor market.
Josh, do you think people should buy small cap stocks right now?
I think small cap stocks should be a part of people's allocation. I don't know that overweighting them necessarily is like from a timely perspective, something that anyone needs to urgently do. It's not as though you don't have your pick of a lot of good value stocks that are larger, high quality names in the growth bucket. a lot of these names have now come in. So, like, are you forced to overweight small caps? No. So why bother? I don't think that that's, like, necessarily where we are in the cycle or something I'd be in a rush to do.
I mean, this has, you know, again, as some would suggest, you know, the makings of a go big or go home market right now, just because of where rates have backed up to. Mm-hmm. If volatility is going to pick up, why wouldn't you stay with the largest stocks, most dependable in quotes, within the market? Maybe that steers you to the mega caps, which you've been adding to, by the way, like Apple, which you added to again.
I did, and I'm now overweight in Apple.
Okay.
Just because it's underperformed so massively, and I do think it's underowned relative to its historical average, where I think the rest of FANG actually is pretty well owned. And I actually took a little bit of Amazon profits and put it into the Apple because I do think the risk reward is better. The numbers have been coming down. We know how bad China is. They are eventually going to fix it. I still think they're going to be able to grow double digits in earnings with record margins in the face of really challenging environment. We have services that we have to look forward to in terms of double-digit growth. We have AI to look forward to. Look what happened last week when they talked about Mac and having new products with AI. It was up 4% in a day. I mean, one of the biggest days that it's seen in over a year. Mm-hmm. So to me, like, I'm looking for places. It's not necessarily all of the FANG and all of, you know, go big or go home. It's trying to pick some spots where I think there's really good value and good risk reward. Apple, I think, is one of them.
Jimmy, long Mag 7 continues to be the most crowded trade. And that, again, according to the same fund manager survey that I referenced just a moment ago, the one that was the most bullish in the market since January of 2022.
I think we need to retire the name for the obvious reason that Tesla is just
You could call it the Fab Five, whatever.
I think this,
you can do whatever you want.
Extends,
you know the point
I think this
that's
extends the comment that you started with the show. Do we need to change the playbook? Should we change from the broadening of the rally back to the narrowing of the rally? I've given my answer. I think the answer is no. Having said that,
what's up today, by the way? I don't mean to cut you off, but what's up today? Nvidia's up, Microsoft's up, Meta's up, Amazon's up, Alphabet's basically flat, but
Apple?
At a point of Apple's had its own issues. At a point of alleged turmoil within the market, the safety trade has been back big. Mega caps.
I mean, today, if you want to pick today, I'll explain to you. Mm. If you want to pick today, that's fine. But take a look at beloved NVIDIA, which I like a lot, okay? And I'd like to add
this
to
This has
it.
Been the most defensive trade in the market for the last year and a half.
Well, what's it off from its recent high?
It doesn't matter if it's
off
from its high.
How can you say it doesn't
it's
matter?
It's been the most defensive trade in the market.
That's
why the stocks have worked.
Hang on, Josh. I'm in it with Scotty. I got to finish this, okay? The market, God, you killed me today. The market's down 4% from its peak. If you measure it from the S&P 500, what's NVIDIA down from its peak? 10%. Stop it. It hasn't been defensive. Not in this pullback.
Not within this most recent market upset.
No, that's what we're talking about.
There's a reason why these stocks dominated the conversation for as long as they did. And investors have been able to play both offense on AI and defense for safety and good balance sheets through a lot of market turmoil, more so than any area of the market.
But
you'll not
recently.
Prove to me otherwise.
Not recently.
Not within the last few weeks of or a month of the, you know, backup in rates when we started talking
now
about
I'm,
higher
now
for
I'm
longer.
Now I'm the short-term guy.
But it used to be that Mag 7, they were the only game in town in terms of earnings. Everybody else didn't have really good earnings.
Well, the most
so
dependable
now,
ones.
And so now, fast forward, well, look back at fourth quarter, if you look at energy, financials, industrials, they kept up with technology. That's my point. Like, if earnings were terrible in these sectors, or you didn't have a lot of visibility in these other sectors, that's one thing. But you actually do have better visibility in these sectors, and you have pricing power, and you have free cash flow generation, and you have debt pay down. These are stories that are, you know, this has happened in tech, hasn't happened in these other sectors, but now it's happening. So that's why I'm saying, like, it's broadening out, and that's very exciting,
sure,
actually.
Sure, but the earnings, I think the only point I'm making, the earnings durability has been way more reliable in mega cap tech than it has been to any of these other sectors over a longer period of time.
100%. That's why they call them cyclicals, because they're not. But at least if you get the cycle right, you can make a heck of a lot of money.
Josh, yeah, quick, and then we're going to take a break.
Sorry to be annoying. You are right. James is off. The Magnificent Seven. There's an ETF, very simple, MAGS. So if we want to speak about this group colloquially, just equal weight them in the ETF. They're up 15% year to date, which is better than the S&P now 6. I'm using the SPY. And even in this recent pullback, they've held up better. They're like 1% off the high. The S&P is more. So I think look, Tesla's an eyesore. Apple does have its own issues, but Scott is right. People are using these stocks, whether they should or shouldn't, we'll find out. People are using these stocks on days where there's volatility. They're clinging to them like a candle in the wind. That's undeniable in the price action. I'm not saying they should, I'm just saying they are.
It's okay, fine. But Nvidia, Apple, Tesla in the most recent pullback? Absolutely not. Factual. This is not opinion. This is a fact. In the most recent pullback,
we're saying those stocks, seven.
Those stocks,
so give me the other
those stocks have done worse.
You're cherry picking.
Three out of the seven?
Picking.
Okay, I'm cherry picking.
Because you are cherry picking because both Tesla and Apple have had their own selective issues of late where these others have not. And Nvidia, okay, so you're going to say, well, it hasn't held up that great. Where? What's that stock? The stock is, it's not that far below
$900.
Hang on a second, Josh. No, no, not come on. You come on.
It's up 75% year to date.
Until this discussion, we have been talking about the most recent pullback.
Year to date.
You're the one who's cherry-picking, and you're cherry-picking the time frame. We started this discussion about what's going on in the markets right now.
I'm sorry. I'll go back 12 months, so you don't want me to. Over the last 12 months, NVIDIA is up 225%.
What's it doing right now?
Oh, okay. Okay. If you're going to make your whole market argument about what's happened in the last 2 weeks, then
that's what we're talking about.
Good luck.
That's what we're talking. You're talking about what's changed in the markets, and do we need our change of playbook in what's going on in the markets right now? Don't talk to me about what happened in January or last year.
Okay. We'll take a break.
Good discussion.
Our chart of the day is next. Live Nation, that's lower on reports the company is going to be sued for antitrust violations. Shot. Josh owns it. We'll get his reaction. Calls of the day coming up, too.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Visit odfl.com to learn more.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Let's do some stocks on the move now. We start with United Health off the back of earnings. That's a much-needed lift in those shares by 6%. They did beat. Jimmy, you own it. You say it's on probation because it hasn't performed well of late. Does this relieve any of your fears about where this stock was heading, at least in the near term?
It does relieve my fears. It raises another question. I mean, the reason it's up today, folks, is simply that it didn't do badly. Expectations were extremely low. They reaffirmed guidance for the full year. Their medical loss ratio, which is the amount they pay out in claims, was a little higher in the first quarter than expected. And the fear in this stock has been that that would extend through the rest of the year. That doesn't appear to be the case. They have a lot of charges coming from this cyber attack. And the issue that I now faced with this is great. The worst fears have not been realized, but where does it go from here? We're still in an environment where it trades at a premium multiple, and these medical loss ratios are high. So I'm somewhat uncertain about this, but I'll take the win for today.
Steph, J&J, they beat. Revenue was a slight miss. You didn't love it. You've been trimming it, too, and you're about to bounce this thing, I feel like.
I definitely am. If we get, like, a rally of some sort, which I'm not even sure this is going to bounce, but...
What's the problem here?
I mean, the quarter was fine. They beat on the pharmaceutical business, which I like, but MedTech disappointed. And MedTech is supposed to shine now as utilization rates are improving. And they even talked about utilization rates improving. So that makes me think they're losing market share. And, you know, in general, I think MedTech is kind of tired. And I sold Zimmer a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about that. Mm-hmm. So to me, I just don't see a catalyst to get this thing higher. And, oh, by the way, I mean, all of their M&A as of late has been in MedTech, and they can't even deliver on the report. So it's not a disaster by any means. I just think there's other places to put your money in the market at this point.
You have seen people, you know, maybe institutional clients, at least some firms moving money out of healthcare.
Yeah.
So maybe we're sort of rethinking the trajectory of that trade, too.
For sure.
Let's do our chart of the day, Josh. It's Live Nation. So the DOJ has filed its antitrust suit against that company, or they're preparing to, I should say. What do we do here with a stock that you've liked for an awfully long time?
So this came out last July. It's almost a full year. This has been an overhang on the stock. If you look at a one-year chart, on July 28th, somebody got at Politico got tipped that the Department of Justice was thinking about bringing the suit or about to bring the suit. The stock got hammered. It fell from $100 down to 77 over the course of a couple of months, bottomed, and then eclipsed that previous high in the last month or so. So I feel as though this has already been fully discounted into the market. Today says that it hasn't. Okay, fine. If you think there's a full divestiture coming of Ticketmaster from Live Nation, then maybe today's reaction is not enough. Almost nobody on Wall Street thinks that's going to be the end result. The bottom line is it's politically popular sometimes, especially going into an election, to beat up on Ticketmaster because young people were mad that they didn't get Taylor Swift tickets and they blame bots or whatever. But the truth is the artists are in control of the pricing more so than any other force in the universe. Everybody in the industry knows it. That's why this particular thing probably doesn't end up with a divestiture. So maybe they pay a fine, or maybe they have to end non-exclusivity contracts, or some kind of like practice management result. I don't think it'll be catastrophic for the stock. I remain long, and I actually think it's a good thing once the thing happens that the cloud goes away, because we're all aware, okay, this bomb dropped already. What's next?
Let me get to Contessa Brewer now with the headlines. Hi, Contessa.
Hi there, Scott. Good to see you. China is funding the U.S. fentanyl crisis, according to a House panel report released today. The House Select Committee has concluded that China used tax credits and other incentives to subsidize fentanyl components and manufacturing, which then point to the country's key role in the flow of fentanyl in the U.S. The report also provides recommendations to curb the crisis. The Maui Fire Department is expected to release a report today detailing how it responded to the Lahaina wildfires last year. The Hawaii Attorney General's office will release its findings tomorrow, and both of these reports could help the state understand exactly what happened when fires engulfed the historic town, killing 101 and causing an estimated $5 billion of damage, or maybe even more. And legendary manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, Whitey Herzog, has died. The Hall of Famer won three division and league titles with the team and was known for his innovative style of using speed, defense, and line drive hitters, then was named Whitey Ball in his honor. The Cardinals confirmed his death in a statement. He was 92 years old. Scott, I'll send it back to you.
That was a great manager. All right. Contessa, thank you. Contessa Brewer. Up next, calls of the day. Uber, General Motors, GE Vernova, steps in buying a bunch of that of late. We will discuss next.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, calls of the day. Josh, we start with you because Uber has been called the best idea into earnings for this year at J.P. Morgan. Price target, $95. Overweights the rating, has a strong three-year outlook. And, I mean, the outlook in the last year has been ridiculous, too. I mean, stock's up 100, more than 130% over 1 year, and they have earnings coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, well, this is the fourth best stock of all of last year, like literally. After NVIDIA, I think Constellation Brands is in that list, and one other. It was only Uber. Look, I think that this is a $100 stock. I've been relentlessly pounding my fist on the table since it was in the 20s that I believe that. It's one of the last of the major platforms that exist, the major TAMs in this world, to really have a king get crowned. And transportation of goods and people and freight is Uber's wheelhouse. They basically own it, and I think that's going to continue. What's interesting that the analyst said, which we don't talk about a lot, there's now a $7 billion buyback plan running through 2026, which should help increase earnings, and that number can probably go higher. In addition, they are now much more focused on absolute profit dollar growth versus incremental margins. So it's a shift in focus that Dara is overseeing, and I think it's going to work for shareholders long term. So
okay.
I'm a shareholder, I'm not a trader here, and I like the stock.
Okay, GE Vernova, I mentioned, initiated buy stuff at Goldman today. 154 is the price target. There's a stock at 130. You've been buying more, bought more last week.
Yeah.
You say almost every day.
Yeah, it's been a crazy stock. I mean, it came out of the chute and it fell 14%. So I initiated a bigger position when it fell 14%, then rallied 12, and now it's down 6. So I'm just taking advantage of spins that are a little volatile in the beginning for obvious reasons. I like the wind power electrification theme very much. They have a 30% install base to world electricity. I think margins have upside, free cash flow has upside, services has upside to the overall mix. So I like this for the long term at 11 times EBITDA.
Jimmy, General Motors, top pick, Deutsche Bank. Hold is the call, though. Price target to 50 from 44.
And they think that GM is going to raise guidance when they report next week. I think that's a reasonable conclusion. It's not a slam dunk, but it's reasonable based on what we're seeing about car buying volumes, where prices are, what they're doing with cost control. I think the real lever here, and this is not usually what you're going to hear me say, is what is the share count when they report earnings? Because they did a buyback, an accelerated share buyback that was worth something between 20 and 25% of the company's outstanding shares. So they, you know, some people say that's financial engineering. I will say a company that's got good cash flows is going to concentrate my earnings power by buying back shares. That's what I'm actually really looking for when the report comes out.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Mike Santoli on the other side with his midday word. We are back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is at Post 9 with us for his midday word. You know, if we have this relentless backup in rates, you're going to be looking at a stock market that looks at best like it does
right.
of late.
I mean, no, that's right. So, as I've been saying, the Treasury yields are kind of searching for the pain threshold. People can estimate what that is in terms of restraining economic growth and just sort of bumping up against where equity valuations are. If it's 4.8, if it's 5, I've seen some evidence of that. What I still think is relevant, though, it doesn't translate into a specific level for the market. It just kind of directionally puts pressure in that direction. And then tactically, you know, it's kind of like, are we oversold yet? Are we hoping for a little more heavy selling so it's not so orderly? I think that's the zone we're in right now. You have home builders in a 10% correction. So a lot of the stuff that, you know, that people were leaning on into the first quarter this year is just getting questioned. And I think nothing makes this look anything more than kind of normal backing up after a rally. But what bonds are doing and bond volatility perking up makes it uncomfortable. And I think it emboldens people who felt like you want a lower exposure, not raise.
Some are looking at the current landscape with, you know, much less rosiness from an economic standpoint that some of the data would suggest. Pantheon Macro, yeah. You know, like Ian Shepherdson. The danger of a substantial downside surprise to growth is growing. Auto yeah. sales are falling outright. Momentum has faded in airline passenger numbers and in hotel occupancy.
Yeah. So Ian has been looking for kind of the soft underbelly for a little while. Like, he's thought that the labor market actually was less than meets the eye for a little bit. Last jobs report, the market kind of took it on face value. I think, to me, the escape hatch is 100% inflation numbers. I mean, that's all that has to happen, is inflation has to be a little bit more tame, and then it relieves the pressure. We don't have to say, you know, the Fed can't ease into this, and it buys you a little bit of time, and then the floating rate economy can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. PCE, that day is going to be large, to say the least. And we expect the number is going to be good, but we have to wait. We're going to have to wait. And that's going to come right in the thick of tech earnings, too.
Yeah, which may not be the worst thing, because I always think earnings season has to build. It feels like every quarter we say, wow, you know, the beats aren't getting rewarded that well, and the misses are getting destroyed. And that always seems like how it starts out. And then you build toward the big growth names, you know, kind of dazzling you.
All right, I'll see you on closing bell. I'll look forward to that. Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator, coming up. Are we betting on a bounce? A handful of stocks on notable losing streaks. We're going to trade them. See what Berkshire's done of late? What about Boeing? Home Depot? IBM? We'll trade them next. All right, we're back. So we're going to go through some losing streaks of some big name stocks that our committee members own. We're going to start with Boeing, Stephanie Link.
Yes.
11 down days in a row.
It's been a tough one for sure. I mean, it's down 32% year to date. We know the reasons why. I think this is just going to take a really long time to play itself out. Because we do have new management, we're going to have a new CEO, and that's going to take a while for the transition. But I still like the duopoly aspect with Airbus. I think the backlog is still very strong. I say it all the time. They have 9 years worth of backlog of planes. And so they just got to get it together. And I think them improving on quality over the long term will be very positive. But you just have to be patient.
Josh, why is Berkshire down 6 days in a row?
I think the stock has had a huge run. And they took down a lot of these names that I think were related to the rate cut and having that get pushed out. I don't think it's more complicated than that. So until somebody tells me otherwise, this is probably more of a buying opportunity than a reason to sell.
Jimmy, you have it too.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we need to make it very complicated. The only thing I might add to it is, I mean, maybe it's the Big Apple position, but the stock's off, what, like 7.5% and is from its high. And as Josh said, it's had one heck of a run.
IBM, Steph, 5 days in a row. Depot, five in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I think IBM is selling off just with the regular tech, and it got a little bit of excitement over AI, and maybe a little bit of weakness in consulting, just given macro, but and Accenture numbers. But I still like what they've done in terms of the revenue mix. 75% is software and consulting. That's going to help margins over the long term, and it's cheap.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to call an audible. I'm going to do one more. It's Camden Property. Just because it sticks out from the real estate space, which has been under pressure because of this backup in rates. It's four down days in a row.
Yeah, so interesting. This thing was a darling early in the COVID era as rents were going up. And now rents aren't going up so much. And this is actually to the point Steffi was making about CPI earlier, that shelter has been coming down. And you see it in Camden Property Trust. You see it in the rents. It's really that simple. But I think for the long run, this is an exquisitely managed company. So I'm going to stick with it.
This just seems like, you know, high rates down stock.
Yeah, that's true, too, Scott. That's true, too.
More so than apartment prices, rents.
I do think it's more rents, but I'm not denying that high rates have a role in it.
Invitation Homes, too, Josh, is on 4-day losing streak, presumably for the same reason of a backup in rates.
Yeah, I mean, it's a yield story. This is rental homes, so for sure.
All right, we'll do finals next. Still have a bunch of earnings ahead, so let's get the setup for you. Stephanie Link, you first on Las Vegas Sands. That's tomorrow, and that's after the bell.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be pretty good. It's the strength in Macau and pent-up demand. We know that aircraft and ferry capacity has increased. That should help them, and I think the margin story will be fine.
Genuine Parts, that's Thursday before the open, Jimmy.
Stock's been lackluster, to say the least, Scotty. However, the fundamentals should be intact here. We know the average age of cars on the road is very long. Those cars need to be repaired. Plays right to GPC.
All right. So I'm glad we had this housing conversation earlier because DR Horton reports Thursday before the bell. What do we think about this? Stock's down 4.5% year-to-date, plays right into that backed-up rate story.
Yeah, I know. But this is going to be seasonally a very strong quarter for them. It is. KBH had 55% order growth sequentially when they reported 2 weeks ago. I think it's going to be a great quarter. It's a matter of the macro versus the micro, but I like it for the long term.
All right, we'll see what happens there. Let me give you a reminder what's coming up on Closing Bell in a couple hours' time. Adam Parker is going to be with me. He's been bullish. We'll find out what he thinks about this choppy market, we'll call it that. Keith Lerner, read you a note that he put out earlier. We'll have a conversation later, and then B of A CEO Brian Moynihan, of course, will be with me as well. But let's do final trades in the minute that we have left. Josh Brown, you want to start us off with a name that's on your mind?
Yeah, throw this chart up for me, Patty. This is AppLovin. It is the number one performing large cap stock of the year so far, up about 80%. Right now, in the midst of a very low volume pullback, this one's on my radar. Haven't pulled the trigger yet.
All right, you let us know if you do. But that stock is up about 2.25% as we talk about it here. Farmer Jim.
CVS. Now, this is not a slam dunk either. It's been a terrible stock.
I mean, well, it's let's been call a dunk. It what it is.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
It's dunked on.
It's been dunked on multiple times. The most recent time was 2 weeks ago when this Medicare reimbursement rate for 2025 came out, less than expected. Let's hear what they have to say about that when they report earnings next week.
All right, the Linkster.
I like Freeport-McMoRan. If you believe China's recovering, the copper market is just getting going.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, everybody. I will see you on Closing Bell a couple hours' time. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too, so she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor, guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.